American men have lost 59.3% of the total sperm count, and half are now close to being or are unable to reproduce. Men in developing nations have lost none of their sperm. And so we ask, why did American men lose 59.3% of their total sperm?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,115th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby. Jason, got a question for you.
All right.
Is the reason we men are losing our sperm in the air we breathe, in the water we drink, or in the food we eat?
It's a very impotent question. I don't know.
And for which you have no answer? Well, folks, let's talk about the future. Your future, my future, everybody's future. To get to that future, we will need viable sperm of males and the viable eggs of females. Just like we learned in back here in grade school, right? To see how the future is shaping up, folks at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York teamed up and conducted the first ever systematic review and meta-analysis of sperm count trends throughout the world. Now, here's what the study found about our prospects for the future. In the past 40 years, sperm counts around the world declined by 50%, and the counts are continuing to decline. The most significant declines were found in the developed world, North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, where men have lost 59.3% of their total sperm count. 50% of the men in the developed world are now at the point of being or are unable to reproduce. No declines in sperm counts were found in men from developing nations. Commenting on the research that revealed the numbers, Danish fertility researcher Dr. Niels Skakkebæk said, and I quote, "Here in Denmark, there is an epidemic of infertility. More than 20% of Danish men do not father children. More worryingly is that semen quality is in general so poor that the average young Danish man has much fewer sperm than men a couple of generations ago. And get this, more than 90% of their sperm are abnormal. That men in developed nations are losing their fertility while men in developing nations are losing none leads us to ask today, why have men in the developed world lost 59.3% of their total sperm count? Well, here to help us search for an answer, thanks to producer Sarah Bell Lynn, we have Irina Minlis, who is a research project manager at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, and also the co-author of, get this, Temporal Trends in Sperm Count, a Systematic Review and Meta-Regression Analysis. Wow, that's a mouthful. Irina, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Show.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So, this is a very big survey, by a very big team on a very big subject. What led you folks to get together and decide to pursue this?
Well, there was three prior systematic reviews and meta-analysis, but there was a lot of disagreement in the reproduction research community about whether the trends that they showed were actually robust, because the methodologies they used are somewhat inconsistent. So the goal was to have a meta-analysis that addressed all the flaws in the previously done research to have sort of a robust and definite answer on whether there is actually a decline in sperm count.
And tell us about your team, because it was quite a distinguished team.
So this actually started because all of the authors, all seven of us, we were in New York at the same time. Some of them were there for a conference. Some of them were there, for example, the primary author, Dr. Levin, was there as a visiting scholar for a year. So we just all sort of found ourselves in one institution at the same time, which is how we all came together. But we are from very different places like Israel, Brazil, Denmark, Spain, and the U.S.
So a little bit of serendipity helps out, huh?
Yes, definitely.
And what part did Irina play in this study?
My background is in epidemiology. I was at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, and I met Dr. Levin through a professor of mine that I had, the most senior author on the study, Dr. Swan. Mm-hmm. So that's how I joined the team.
Good. And so, as you said, the reason you looked at this situation was that the evidence that you had in hand was inconsistent and kind of uncertain. And so mm-hmm. you decided to take a systematic approach mm-hmm. and go for it. Tell us a little bit about the systematic approach.
Sure. So what it means, so a systematic review and meta analysis, what that means is that you take you come up with an idea of, okay, this is what we're interested in looking at. Then you get all the studies that were ever published all together. You find them through searching scientific databases from all over the world. And then you take each and every statistic published in all of those, and then you combine it for one sort of final statistic. So that's how you're just like statistically putting together statistics.
Right. And that's what they call a meta study, which is a study of studies, correct?
Yeah. And it's systematic because you pre-specify how you're going to do that, right? Because if you didn't do that, then, you know, you could change your processes along the way, and that would be kind of fishy. So before you even start looking at studies, you decide, okay, this is what years we're going to be looking at. These are what countries we're going to include. This is the method of sperm count we're going to include. So you pre-specify all of that so that then, you know, if another group of researchers wanted to reproduce your study, then they could do that and verify it.
Which would make it a scientific study.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, when I put out a press release on the subject of show, got a lot of comments about, mm-hmm. well, I've never been able to count my sperm, and so on, as you can mm-hmm. well imagine, okay. whenever guys start joking around. But exactly, how does one count sperm?
Well, there's a few methods to count sperm. Some of them are manual, and some of them are automated. For the purposes of this study, we used the method, we only included studies that had used the method that's recommended by the World Health Organization, which is called a hemocytometer. It is sort of a manual way of counting it. But sometimes fertility clinics do use the more automated way of counting it, when they're not mainly doing it for scientific purposes. Mm-hmm.
And what areas of the world did you look?
So we included studies that had been published in any country. We didn't exclude from anywhere, but we did group studies or regions together based on sort of Western and non-Western countries.
So developed and non-developed countries. Kind
yeah.
of, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those developed countries tend to be North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand.
Exactly, yes.
Are there any other countries in the world that are developed?
Well, there certainly are developed countries in areas that we refer to as underdeveloped or non-Western. It's just what's the, you know, trend in those areas.
Okay.
Just as you could argue that there's countries in Europe that are less developed than others.
Good. And, Irina, we always like to ask our guests the big question, which, of course, is who pays the way for the study?
Oh, so, well, for this study, we all had sort of individual funding, but we didn't pursue specific funding for this study. So the main author, Dr. Levine, had funding from his university, as did Dr. Swan from Mount Sinai, but we didn't specifically apply for funding to conduct this study. The thing about meta-analysis is that it takes a lot of work and time, but you can do it very inexpensively because it's just a researcher's time, but you don't actually need a lot of supplies or anything.
Poor slaves, right? Scientific slaves, yeah. Pouring over numbers. Well, good. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about the missing sperm of the American male and those of the developed nations. We're going to look and see what Irina and her friends found in their research project, and the numbers are shocking. Stay tuned.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it, it's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, some good folks got to wondering about the numbers and the statistics of the sperm count of males around the world. So they conducted a temporal trends in sperm count, a systematic review, and meta-regression analysis. And we have one of the co-authors of that study, Irina Minlis, who is a research project manager at Mount Sinai in New York City. Irina, we see some really scary numbers in this study. Are they really all that scary, or do they just look that scary?
No, I would say they are. I think that when we started, we all expected that we would find a decline. I don't think we expected it would be this bad.
Well, let's go through some of these numbers for the folks out there so that they can get a notion of where we're headed in the future here. Because without viable sperm and without viable eggs, there isn't going to be any future. So first thing that struck my attention, in the past 40 years, 50% decline in sperm count to 47 million sperm per milliliter. Now, to me, that sounds like an awful lot of swimmers in an awful small pool, but maybe not, huh?
Yeah, if it's under 40 million per milliliter, then it becomes harder to conceive.
So we're down to 47 million, and when we get to 40, we're no longer going to be able to conceive.
Well, no longer, but it will definitely be harder.
Okay. And so in 40 years, so this is kind of like 40 years is almost the advent of modern chemicals and technologies, is it not? I mean, that's...
Yeah, and I think a lot of us in our research team, we're definitely guided by that. We're intrigued and guided by that question.
So it's 40 years ago. I mean, I was raised as a kid on the grandparents' farm, and there were horses, workhorses, you know. And there weren't any pesticides. And so they brought those materials into our food chain, and now they became a major part of the food chain in the last 40 years. And in the last 40 years, we've seen a 50% decline in our sperm count.
Yeah.
And the next thing that Irina, that really struck my attention was that the counts are continuing to decline. And does that mean the rate of decline is accelerating, or what does it mean?
No, we didn't necessarily see it accelerating. It's just continuing. There's just no sign of leveling off. We also did a restricted analysis just looking at the period from 1996 to 2011, and we found that largely the trend is the same. It's not speeding up, but it's not slowing down either.
Okay, but it's still continuing to decline.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
correct.
Another thing that I wondered about, let's move on to the next one. Most significant declines found in developed world, North America, mm-hmm. Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, 59.3% loss in total sperm. What exactly does that mean?
So it means that if you take all the studies that we included that come from those regions, the number of the sperm concentration has gone down about 1.4% per year, or 52% overall, over the 40 years of the study period. And this is only in men unselected by fertility. For example, if there was a study that included a group of men who were already concerned about not being able to conceive, then we didn't include that because, we knew that their sperm count would already be lower.
Okay, so normal men.
Yes.
And these were normal men in developed mm-hmm. nations.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. 50% of the men in the developed world are now at the point of being or are unable to reproduce.
No, I wouldn't say that. Usually the rate is around 20%. It's not that they're unable to reproduce, but that they find it harder. It's just that as a group, over 40 years, if you take all 43,000 people included in the study, you take out the ones in the Western countries, and you do sperm analysis from 1973 onwards, then the total number of sperm found in those sperm samples have been decreasing. But it doesn't talk about, what percentage of those will be unable to reproduce.
Maybe I snagged that number from some other places as I was going through this. But it is definitely harder to... You made the mention of the fact that we're down to 47 million. From how much was the baseline?
I don't have that number.
Okay. So we're down to 47 million in around the world. And when you get to 40 million, it becomes harder to get to conceive.
That is the threshold that's usually associated with a decreased monthly probability of conception.
Wow. So there we are. We're getting to the point then where it's going to be really hard to conceive. Now, the most amazing thing, of course, is that you have the situation in the developed world where men have lost 59.3% of their total sperm count. But when you look at men in the developed world or developing world, which is sometimes called the third world, you don't see that decline. Is that true?
Correct. So we didn't see a decline, or at least a decline that's significant in non-Western countries. It is important to note, though, that most of the studies that we included came from the developed world because we do more research.
Mm-hmm.
We had something like 175 estimates that came from Western countries versus 69 that came from non-Western countries. So, we are more sure of the results in Western countries than in the non-Western countries because there's less studies. But, it's still a good number, and, we didn't see that trend in the non-Western world.
So you had roughly twice as much data to consider?
It's more like almost 70%, I think, of the estimates had came from...
Okay, maybe we'll go two-thirds then. You had two-thirds more information from or data from developed nations as compared to one-third of the data from developing nations. But yet the trend still is pretty obvious, wasn't it? Kind of like a sore thumb. There it is.
Yeah, it really is.
And did that amaze you? I mean, when you did that amaze the team when they came to look at this and they discovered that people in the developing world are losing the ability or having a much harder time making babies than those in the developing world?
I think we expected it. We just didn't expect it to be so steep and so dire. But we did expect a decline.
And it is declining.
Yeah, we're very pessimistic, so I think we all expected a decline.
Okay. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about a study that was coming out of Jerusalem and New York City entitled Temporal Trends in Sperm Count, a Systematic Review and Meta-Regression Analysis. What it says, in essence, is that those of us who live in the developed world, the first world, the smart, rich countries, are losing the ability to make babies, while those in the undeveloped world are not. So, why are we losing our ability to make babies? We're down 59.3% in our sperm count. That's the question on the table today. What do you think? 831-479-1080. Love to hear. We will be right back with Arena and we'll look at exactly why we are losing our sperm.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, let's. What's eating what right now is the fact that men in the developed world are losing their ability to make babies. The numbers are going down year by year. Sperm counts are way down to 47 million, and when you hit 40 million, good luck. But in the developing world, it's not the case at all. The sperm counts are still up. Things are still cooking. And Irina Minlis and her associates have developed the statistics, the numbers that prove it in their Temporal Trends in Sperm Count, a Systematic Review and Meta-Regression Analysis. What's a meta-regression analysis?
So a meta-analysis is when you take all the statistics from published studies in the past, and you'll use another statistical method called meta-regression to combine all the numbers into sort of one estimate, which is, in this case, this 52% or 59% number that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. And you're an epidemiologist. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. It means that I study the how health processes and risks are distributed in a population at a given time.
So this is right up your alley, so to speak, then, this study.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, we look for, you know, problems. We look for, in this case, we wanted to see, okay, is there a problem? And, you know, what can we say for sure there's a problem or not?
So when your team, which consisted of researchers from all around the world, came up with its conclusion, did they conclude that there was a big problem here?
Yeah. I think that you could argue whether the problem is big or not if the percentages and the decline was smaller, but I don't think anybody at this point is arguing that this is not worrisome.
Okay. Well, now, it doesn't seem to be a problem in the developing world, but it seems to be a problem in the developed world, which is the rich countries of the world. So what on earth are we doing to kill ourselves, so to speak?
Yeah. So we didn't design the study to provide information on the cause of the decline.
Okay.
But we do know from prior studies by other teams that sperm count has been associated with the number of environmental and lifestyle influences, mm-hmm. Such as pesticides, heat, lifestyle factors like dieting, stress, smoking. So you could say that, you know, the difference between regions could be just modern environments on male health, although we didn't look at the causes in our study.
Okay, but being an epidemiologist, you have notions, right?
Yeah.
You do. Okay. Well, you know, just doing a quick scan of the internet for sperm, what causes sperm counts to disappear. We see medical reasons, environmental reasons, and health reasons. It seems like the list included just about every element of modern life in developed nations.
True. And I think, like I said before, the study, we only included, quote, unquote, normal men. So we didn't include males who had medical reasons for suspected lower sperm counts, or if they had some anatomy issues or some conditions that would already lower sperm count, then we didn't include those,
mm-hmm.
Which is why we think that it could be more lifestyle and environment factors.
Well, one of the things that keeps popping up, as it were, is the endocrine disruptors that are endemic in our developed world. And would you help me out a little bit with this? Endocrine disruptors are simply those chemicals that disrupt our body's hormones, correct?
Exactly, yeah. So it's from, you know, it disrupts your endocrine system from chemical exposures or, for example, maternal smoking during critical windows of male reproductive development, that sort of thing.
So there's many different ways in which we can disrupt our hormones. And
I'm afraid so.
I'm afraid so, yeah. Well, this being the Food Chain Radio program, I'd like to point out one of them would be the food we eat, correct?
Correct.
Correct. I guess, you know, in the news recently, we've had two mind-boggling revelations. One, of course, is that the ultimate comfort food, Kraft macaroni and cheese, contains phthalates. Now, what phthalates are the chemicals used to soften plastic and make it pliable. So when we eat comfort food that has phthalates on it, that could very well be one of the things that is disrupting our hormones to the extent that our hormones don't know what to do, right?
Well, I'm not familiar with that literature. That's not sort of what I usually research, but, I mean, it definitely sounds like it's probably the case.
Probably the case. The other thing that popped into the news here recently, which we covered last week on the Food Chain, was the fact that Ben and Jerry's ice cream, 10 of 11 samples of Ben and Jerry's ice cream contain glyphosate. How on earth does a weed killer get into milk and ice cream? Well, of course, we feed our dairy cattle genetically modified soybeans that have been sprayed heavily with glyphosate, and there it is. But but soybeans in themselves are an endocrine disruptor, are they not?
I really don't know. It's not my area at all, I'm afraid. It's the area of some of my co-authors, but not mine.
Okay.
So I couldn't really say.
Mm-hmm. But I bet you can guess.
I mean, it definitely sounds pretty scary.
Uh-huh. So I was just wondering about, you know, so much health food is based on soy, which has been genetically modified to withstand glyphosate. So, and glyphosate is an endocrine disruptor, and soy is an endocrine disruptor. So here we have two things that are a foundation of our food chain, and both of them are endocrine disruptors. And that's just one example of many, many, many. So it seems like what we have is a continuous, never-ending assault on our endocrine system.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, it's pesticides, it's disrupting chemicals, and it's also, aside from dieting, all other lifestyle factors like smoking and stress.
So we're just really going after ourselves, it seems like. It seems like we're just conducting a never-ending war on ourselves here in the developed world, but not in the developing world. And therein lies an interesting question. What are we doing that they're not doing? And because they have a lot of exposure to chemicals there, sometimes even worse than here. But I don't think they're eating Kraft macaroni and cheese. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Irina Mindlis, who is a research project manager at Mount Sinai Medical Center and author, co-author of Temporal Trends in Sperm Count, a systematic review of meta-regression analysis. Right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, get these numbers that Irina Mindlis and her associates working counting sperm around the world came up with. They're looking at sperm count trends in the developed and undeveloped world, and this is what they come up with. In the past 40 years, sperm counts around the world declined by 50%, and they are continuing to decline, which means, essentially, that we're losing the ability to reproduce ourselves. The most significant declines were found in the developed world, North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, where men have lost 59.3. That's 60%, ladies and gentlemen. Gone. 50% of the men in the developed world are now being at the point of being or unable to reproduce. As researcher Dr. Niels Gockenbeck said up there in Denmark, there is an epidemic of infertility. More than 20% of Danish men do not father children. And most worryingly is that the semen quality is in general so poor that an average young Danish man has much fewer sperm than men had a couple of generations ago, and more than 90% of their sperm are abnormal. And finally, and most interestingly, no declines in sperm counts were found in men from developing nations. Irina, quick question. Does this loss compound itself from generation to generation? I mean, it just keeps going, right? If first generation loses 1.5% of their sperm, they're down to this, and then the next generation loses another 1.5, and pretty soon the generations are down to no sperm.
Yeah, correct. They've lost about on average 1.4% per year from 1973 to 2011.
Wow. And so in the developing nations, in the third world countries, we're not seeing this at all. So I get, what are they doing that we're not doing, or what are we doing that they're not doing?
I think that's a great question, but I don't think we're going to be able to answer that without knowing what the cause for the decline in sperm count is. Mm-hmm. So we are definitely hoping that now that we know this is a problem and how dire of a situation it is, that there's going to be funding for research into these causes and plans for prevention. So maybe that will tell us what the difference between both regions are.
Well, Irina, you're a research project manager. How would you go about finding out what, among the many things that we do that destroy ourselves, which ones are the ones that are destroying our sperm? How would you go about finding that answer?
Well, I think it's up to teams of people who do, first of all, animal models. And there's some of the people in our project team that do look at animal models of these things. And then just looking at each of the causes that we suspect individually, for example, environmental factors and lifestyle factors, and then sort of putting it all together to see which one is affecting this decline the most.
So you could get a whole bunch of rats and put them in different cages. and feed one cocaine and another alcohol and have the other smoke cigarettes and so on, and then watch and see what happens. Well, yeah, you could feed some of them Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, exactly. So you would do a number of studies that use different methodologies at the same time. So for some of them, you would do animal studies. For others, you would do, for example, questionnaires on people that have more sperm or less sperm and compare them. And then, you know, get bigger and bigger studies until you can find a more definite answer.
Now, when you release these numbers, it must have, you know, shaken things up a little bit. I mean, when I saw the numbers, I was just absolutely flabbergasted. What did the scientific community say about your work?
Well, this study has definitely had just overwhelming interest by the media, and we've all been following the stories in the news. And they, you know, the media usually consults people from, you know, other teams that are doing related research or experts at academic centers around the world. And what they're mainly saying is that, okay, you know, this sounds, I've read the study, the methods are sound, the results are robust. So, you know, this is real. It isn't, oh, if they're doing biased research, this is actually real, what we're seeing.
Well, my first indication of that was you didn't take any money to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody were paying you to do the research, then I would wonder about that, but nobody is paying you. So it seems like you almost did this on a voluntary basis.
We all had, you know, funding for our own time from other, you know, environmental and health funds or from our universities. But no, we didn't get any funding for this specific research project.
Well, we have a few minutes left after this coming break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you what your team saw in this study and what it portends for our future. In just looking at it, it's shocking that we have lost in the Western world 59.3%, 60% of our total sperm count. And we're getting to the point where it's going to be very difficult to reproduce ourselves. Then what? We will be right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at metrofarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what there is to say is the fact that we are losing our sperm here in the developed world, 59.3% of it in the last 60% in the last 40 years. My goodness. And we continue to lose it 1.4% a year. Not too many years, not going to be anything left. Irina Minlis, you know, as a dedicated scientific researcher, research project manager, your job, of course, is to structure an objective survey, a systematic, objective look at the situation, and then present just the facts, ma'am, correct?
Correct.
And yet, you're a human being, and as are all of the other people on your team. What did you think when you saw the numbers?
People were all pretty shocked. And not only about what this means for reproduction, but what this means for male health overall. Because, you know, sperm count is also, reduced sperm count is also associated with greater all-cause mortality and morbidity. So, you know, we're concerned about what it means overall and not just for conception.
Mm-hmm. And so you present these numbers to the community and say, here's the situation. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? I mean, you probably don't present conclusions like that. I don't know, but what do you think it means?
Well, I mean, we started in 1973. You know, if we look at the estimates from that time, we had about 99 million sperm per milliliter. 2011, we have 47 million. So we're very close to that threshold of 40 million that makes it harder to conceive. So I think it means that, you know, clearly we're doing something wrong as a population, and we urgently need to look at the causes.
Irina, what do you think we're doing most wrong?
I don't want to judge regarding the causes, but I think that what we're doing wrong is that, first of all, it's actually really hard to get funding to conduct research into male reproductive health. So, you know, hopefully this study will help fix that.
Well, it would seem to be a good use of taxpayers' money. Because if we don't find out, we won't have a future.
Yep.
Or will there be some kind of magic potion or something that can replace lost fertility?
Hey, maybe someone's working on that.
Well, I guess that would be a moneymaker. So,
sure.
I just want to thank you for joining us on the Food Chain Radio program today and laying your numbers on the table for us. I know it's your job not to, point at things, but you've helped us look in the right direction, I'm sure. And I'm, for one, am hoping all of us taxpayers can get together and tell the government to figure this out, because if somebody doesn't figure it out, we're out of here. Thank you, Irina Minlis. And folks, remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't. Thank you all for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What, right here on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.